much. Thank you. Let's give him some more love. Well, it's my pleasure, number one, to have Sunday off, and number two, to introduce you to my very best friend for, 15 years now? We just did 15 years. Rick Arnold, who most of you know as my husband, but if you're here for the first time, now you know. Anyway, Rick is a practitioner in this community who's been on leave and is now preparing to come back and soon. And he took a nice sabbatical, so it's really been good for him. But anyway, I just want to introduce him. We all love Rick, but I especially love this man. So give him a warm welcome.
Thank you, sweetheart, for that wonderful introduction. Hello. Am I on? I'm on. Beautiful. It's wonderful to be back here and be upon the stage to speak to you. Last time I was here, it was a little simpler for me, the way I do my talks, because I only had, 8 hours to prepare? It's like an emergency. Maggie had a back problem, couldn't make it here, and so she asked me at 2 o'clock in the morning to show up, and I said, no problem. And so now I've had like 3-4 months, and it's like, so I must have done 50, 60 iterations of my talk. All the way up to this morning, I had this thing all planned out, and I want to apologize publicly to Pam, because put her through a bit of work. I had 10 slides and all this stuff in this structured talk. This morning I woke up, things started popping in my head that it's the way I work. I do things kind of improvisationally, and I felt so constrained to be in the structure. And as I came in, I said, okay, wipe the whole thing out. I only want the 2 slides, not the 10 slides. And we're going to redo this thing in the moment, which is how I work. So hopefully along the way, you're going to get some spiritual nuggets that you yourself get to chew upon on your own journey. And we're looking at this question, what is the common good? And I'm not going to go into, I know this month we've been talking about oneness. And I'm not going to go into the common good on a social, political level, even though that the heart of who we are as a center for spiritual living on the larger organization, the main vision of this organization is to create a world that works for every single person on the planet. Huge vision. But where I want to take you in the what is the common good, and in reality, I can't answer this question for you. I will give you how I see it. But in your own spiritual work, you're going to have to come to a unique, divine answer that truly works for you in the foundation of your own being. Foundations. How many people are taking foundations? Great. I hope to at some point come to the class and assist Peter at some point on one of the evenings. It's a wonderful class. And I just want to inform the students in foundations, because you're getting instruction. And the beautiful thing about this philosophy that I love so much is we want you to be a unique individual. We're not here to shove something down your throat and make you, pay attention to our rules or regulations. Because in truth, that doesn't work. It doesn't assist you in finding your unique being in the expression of the allness of spirit. That's what we're wanting in foundations and all the classes, for you to come to realize. And you have to do the work to have this realization take place. So let's get started. Go on this little journey together. And You know, it's like, I don't know how many of you think of yourselves as being on a spiritual journey. Anyone? Wonderful. Whether you feel like you are or not, you actually are on a spiritual journey. I, in my mind, think it's a better choice if you make that consciously. And years ago, when I was with my first spiritual instructor, and I was, I looked back and, whew, was I naive. I really didn't have a concept of spiritual work and what it was all about. But he kind of was making a dedication, and it was more taught in a Buddhist philosophy. He wanted to make a dedication of my spiritual journey, and he asked me if I wanted to go on the spiritual journey, and I said, well, yeah, sure, let's do this thing. And I talked that way, not to insult anyone, but how I looked back at myself and felt kind of stupid. And so I said, yeah, sure, and he asked again, he said, and he looked at me and he said, are you sure, Rick, that you want to take this journey? And before I could say anything, he saw the puzzlement in my face, because I was thinking, well, what do you mean? And he said right away, he said, because, Rick, once you take the journey, once you start to open your eyes to the truth, you can no longer feign ignorance. You can't live the bliss of ignorance any longer. It's no longer available. And still, in my ignorance, I said, well, yeah, no problem. Let's do this thing. I didn't say it quite that way, but that's the way when I look back, I go, phew, I didn't know what was going on. Anyway, so the spiritual journey, I had this picture hanging in my house, in our house, and I bought it at an art show that Amada is familiar with. At the Santa Rosa Centers for Spiritual Living, once a year they put on an art show with musicians and artists from around the community. And this picture just struck me. It hit me in my soul because it made me realize what it's like to take a spiritual journey. Only you can take your spiritual journey. You're the one that has to step forth into it. You're the one that has to do the work. Now, you see a person, and they're all alone, and I don't mean to say that you're all alone on your spiritual journey. In fact, it's quite the opposite. Because part of my spiritual teachings way back when, in my first, in the Buddhist philosophy, there's one of the pillars was that there's the three pillars of consciousness of learning. It's the Buddha, which is the example, the prime example. Someone like Jesus is a great example. There's the Dharma, the teachings, the deep teachings and learnings. And then there's this thing in my head, I didn't know what it was, called the Sangha. I was going, okay, Sangha, whatever that is. And in my nativity, in my independence, I thought, well, hey, Buddha sounds cool, man, I like that. And these Dharma teachings, man, they're awesome. But this Sangha thing, I'm just going to do this thing on my own. Sangha, in case you don't know, is community, spiritual community. Very important part of being able to further yourself along your path, your journey. And since I just kind of kicked that aside, and I grasped on to this idea of Buddha and Buddhist teachings in a way that, I don't know if you understand what spiritual materialism is, but it's grasping spiritual concepts that you adorn. Maybe it's even how you do your spirituality and you're looking good and I got this thing going on and I know these concepts and I can use them, and sometimes you can even, you know, zap people with them. And well, it's way off course. It's way off course to a true spiritual journey. And what happened for me, I realized when I look back, my spiritual journey just kind of flatlined. You know the heart monitor when it just goes beep? And I wasn't really truly getting anywhere. I think I was adorning myself with other, you know, concepts and thinking I was something, but I was not something. I was getting nowhere. And so things happen in life, and you get sometimes these huge slaps in your consciousness. For me, it was a divorce, bankruptcy. It's like, Rick, psst, wake up. Wake up. And when we don't listen, bam, something else will come along. Hey, psst, wake up. It took a while. Two divorces later. You know, I had discovered. It was like I had done a lot of pointing fingers. I hadn't taken complete responsibility for who I was and what was going on in my life. And as I started entering into another relationship, it happens to be my current wife right here, I had been in the philosophy for a while. I'd become a practitioner. And I knew that something had to be different going into this relationship. I did not want to have what I had had before. I was really wanting to make a shift. And that's what this philosophy helps you do, is to make tremendous shifts. And I said, boy, if this relationship's going to be different in the way I've envisioned having a wonderful relationship, I got to do some work. I got to figure out what's going on with me. And at that time, a wonderful teacher of mine, Reverend Frank Zumalin, who became my teacher for about 5 years, he taught me all about real love, which I've brought to this community early on. And it totally changed my life. It's one avenue to look at relationships and to look at yourself and to understand what it means to be unconditionally loving and how to work with people. And I gobbled that stuff up. And it was controversial at times because of its understanding. Some people would start reading the book and I heard they would throw it against the wall and get so pissed off because it was different. It's very different to come out of the conditional world that we've been raised, that we're in all the time. And we create constructs around it to make ourselves feel safe and to grasp on to any love we can get. Because the problem with conditional loving is it doesn't last very long. It's like taking a teaspoon. When you get into unconditional love, it just floods you, fills you up to overflowing. So it disturbs people because they've built their constructs upon false premise. And to find that common good becomes really difficult. And that the importance of this spiritual journey for all of us, and in the workings of this vision of the Centers for Spiritual Living to create a world that works for all, everyone. It's so important for each individual to take this journey, to become that guiding light in your own life. And in that way, we create a whole new race upon the planet where everyone learns to work together. In our struggles out there in politics and the world and powers and stuff, boy, sometimes it's hard to see. But if we are vigilant with our own selves to discover the power of who we truly are. Now, it can be difficult as a Centers for Spiritual Living just for the reason that we don't have the dogma and the rules and the regulations that some other philosophies and churches and religions have that, I don't know, I don't mean to disregard anyone or any religion, but certain types of that kind of structure turn people into sheep who blindly follow. And a difficulty with centers of spiritual living is we get a room of independent thinkers. Phew, it can get chaotic. But that's exactly what we want. Because we want you to show up as your unique being. And this whole idea of Sanghan, spiritual community, that I discovered, and it started happening first, I think, in 12-step groups for me. It's like, I was a mess. But to feel that community feeling, that upliftment, as I was falling, was a wonderful thing. And then in CSL, as I started to finally get into classes, Foundations was my first class. And everything shifted. All of a sudden, I wasn't this lone seeker who had come to service. On a Sunday, I'd browse the bookstore, big bookstore, look at all the books, do a little bit, and then I'd split, come back again. And it's funny because when I first got there, I was taking the instruction of that I'd gotten from 12-step group I was in. They said, you've got to come at least 6 times so that you get a well-rounded feeling of what this is all about. And so in my mind, I said, well, okay, I wasn't used to going to church and service. Hadn't been since I was a little kid. And I told myself, okay, I'm going to go 6 times minimum to make sure I get a well-rounded approach it, because it felt odd to me, the singing and the holding hands and all the stuff. But just a few services in, I think I was crying at every service. I had to make sure I had a Kleenex box next to me. Every message was, it's all about me. It's all about me. Well, that was, what, back in the early 90s. And so many practitioners that I've worked with, ministers I've worked with, coaches, spiritual guides, leaders, I wouldn't be here with the consciousness I feel with inside my own being without all of their help. Woo. When I look back at who I used to be and the transitions I've taken and how the world has completely changed in front of my face, because of the shifts I've made, the work I've done, the love I've allowed into my life, and the love I've been able to express, to become a being who, you know, wants now more. I've been on this, as Reverend Maggie told you, I've been on a leave of absence, and it was good for me. I went through 2 years of ministerial studies, which were awesome. I just like swallowed them up. I love this stuff. And when it came to the end, and I was like within arm's reach of getting my certificate, I realized me and being a reverend wasn't a right fit. Kind of blew my head when I really had to contemplate on it. And when I quit, all of my classmates, my instructor, were very surprised. I'd been a very good student. And I enjoy this stuff. I enjoy talking. But there's certain aspects of being a reverend. It's like I didn't even want the title. It's like, no, I had discovered something even more rich for me. Years ago in the 12-step groups, they do a lot of work. A lot of the steps have the word God or a power beyond yourself. And years ago, I was in 12-step group, but I was also in this philosophy, and I realized I was leaning 12-step group. And we'd say these things over and over again. And one day I just went, wow, I really don't know what that means. I had mental concepts of God that, you know, got from race consciousness and all that stuff, big man in the sky. And I went, I don't know what that really means. And in my mind, I said, I want to know what that means. It took years. In fact, it was at the end of ministerial school I realized, got it. And at the same time, I realized for myself a beautiful thing for anyone, that it was okay to just be Rick. I'd spent a lifetime wanting to be someone else, thinking that I wasn't enough and I had to be something more. Maybe that's probably why I was in ministerial school. Well, that'll make me something else. People look at me and think, oh, wow, he's a reverend. And when I realized, like, wow, it's good enough just to be Rick. And so I left, took a leave of absence. I needed it. And I delved into things I love to do. A lot of people know I love to bike. I got into swimming. I took a very physical approach to my life because the physical world has always been a wonderful thing for me. In fact, my very first spiritual teacher was the husband of the woman who ran the dance company I was in. And I was the first person she ever allowed to do improvisational dance on stage because I loved it. And this gentleman who was my spiritual teacher would come to all the dances and he would grade the dancers because a lot of them were his students. And he always, and I didn't really understand this. He always gave me an A+. And I thought it was because I knew how to do the move just right. I was good. Can't say I was spectacular physically. But what he was grading me on was the emanation of spirit. He told me that I could teach Dharma with my dancing. I really didn't understand what he was saying to me. Whew. But when I look back and I go, well, how much I loved dancing. Because I remember the first time I was in college and I was a soccer player. I loved playing soccer. I played it for years and got into college and I'd become a goalie because I have very quick responses. And I was being trained by an exceptional goalie. He was my coach. And I beat out like 5 different people to play goalie. Well, I must have gotten awfully nervous because the week before we had to go to our first game, I broke my ribs playing soccer. And then I came back playing soccer again. I broke my ankle. And then someone suggested to me, because they realized I could move well, they suggested, why don't you go study some dance? I'd never thought of that. So I went off into the dance world. And the first time I opened the door to this beautiful dance floor, my mind just went into the world of imagination. And so I'm almost like, whoa, I'm going to get lost in here. So it was a beautiful experience. The physical world, getting back to what I've been doing. And part of this whole talk would come about from doing my swim workouts and just having the ability to go on autopilot and let my mind go free. Is there a Kleenex? I've been letting it loose. Excuse me for a second. But it's good stuff. Thank you. So you might wonder, well, how do we get there, Rick? How do we go to the common ground? How do we find this source in our lives as Jesus did, who claimed I and the Father are one? That was just his unique way of the closeness he felt to source, how he found principle in life and enveloped the principle to become the teacher and the example that he became. There's a saying in my office that I hung on the wall because I like to contemplate it. And it starts out, develop a mind. And it brings me back to my teacher once again, who asked me that question one time. He said, Rick, where is your mind? And I thought, oh, I got this one. It's right here. Felt all proud of myself, and he gently took my hand. He said, Rick, it might be a little more accurate if you pointed here. So when I say mind nowadays, I encompass the energy centers of all the body. You're familiar with the seven chakras. Some people have 12 that they work with, but if you look at the seven energy centers in the body, and you meditate upon your being, and you work with yourself, and you realize that you have to work with the whole setup of who you are to clear your consciousness, to free yourself. And that's where guidance and practitioners and workshops and all the stuff becomes so important to guide you back home to your own true self. The most important thing of all. So it says develop a mind. The next part of the thing it says that rests. And we're running a little short on time, so rest is so important, that feeling of coming to rest. Develop a mind that rests, and here's the kicker, on no thing whatever. That is what opens your consciousness to the beauty of the common good, of the field of all possibility, of deep source that is the foundation of all creation. Develop a mind that rests on no thing whatever. And assist the centers for spiritual living in their vision of a world that works for everyone. Blessings on your journeys. May you all find the assistance and guidance that you need to uncover false beliefs and the residue of our past so that we can become the shining lights as the world starts to shift and change and become a race across the planet of beings who are filled with light. Blessings to you all. Thank you.
Let's give Rick some more love. Rick, thank you. You want to hear from him again? Yeah. Now, do you know why I love him? I'm the luckiest woman on earth. Love you, sweetheart. He goes, do you want to hear my talk? He's walking around the house. And then he goes, no, because it keeps changing. So he went into his office, and he just kept talking to himself. Bodhi and I were down in the living room yesterday. Anyway, we'll have you again. Yeah. Okay, you guys going to come up and do a song for us?